On Life After Death by Elizabeth Kubler Ross. Part 1. Living and Dying. Many people say, "Of course, Dr. Ross has seen too many dying patients. Now she starts getting a bit funny." The opinion which other people have of you is their problem, not yours. This is very important to know. If you have a clear conscience and are doing your work with love, others will spit on you and try to make your life miserable. Then, 10 years later, you are honored with 18 doctorates for the same work. This is the situation in which I find myself. After sitting at the deathbeds of children and old people for many years, listening intently to what they are conveying to you, you will recognize that they know when death is approaching. Suddenly, someone will bid you farewell when you are not thinking that death will arrive soon. If you do not push this statement aside, but continue to sit and listen, then the dying one will tell you all he wants to share. After the patient dies, you will have a good feeling because you may have been the only person who took his word seriously. We have studied 20,000 cases of people all over the world who had been declared clinically dead and who later returned to life. Some awoke quite naturally, others through reanimation. I want to sum up briefly what every human being is going to experience at the moment of death. This experience is the same for everyone, regardless of whether you are an Aboriginal of Australia, a Hindu, a Muslim, a Christian, or an unbeliever. In the same way, this experience doesn't depend on age or economic status. Dying is a human process in the same way that being born is a normal and all human process. The dying experience is almost identical to the experience at birth. It is a birth into a different existence, which can be proven quite simply. For thousands of years, you were made to believe in the things concerning the beyond. But for me, it is no longer a matter of belief, but rather a matter of knowing. And I am prepared to tell you how you can obtain this knowledge, provided you really want to know. If you are not interested in knowing about it, it doesn't make any difference because once you have died, you will know it anyway. And I will sit there and will be full of joy, especially for those who now say, "Poor little Dr. Ross." There are three stages to the moment of death. If you can accept the language used in my conversations with dying children, and which I applied, for instance, in the Dougie letter, then you will accept that the death of the human body is identical to what happens when the butterfly emerges from its cocoon. The cocoon can be compared to the human body, but is not identical with your real self, for it is only a house to live in for a while. Dying is only moving from one house into a more beautiful one, if I may make a symbolic comparison. As soon as the cocoon is in an irreparable condition, be it from suicide, murder, heart attack, or chronic disease, it doesn't matter how it happened, it will release the butterfly, your soul, so to speak. At the second stage, symbolically speaking, after the butterfly leaves its material body, you'll experience some important things which you simply ought to know in order not to be afraid of death anymore. At the second stage, you are supplied with psychic energy, while in the first stage, you are supplied with physical energy. In the latter, you still needed a functioning brain, an alert consciousness to communicate with your fellow beings. As soon as this brain, or this cocoon, is damaged, you do not have an alert consciousness anymore. At the moment when the latter is lacking and when, so to speak, your cocoon is in such a condition that you could neither breathe nor could your pulse or brainwaves be measured, your butterfly has already left the cocoon. This does not necessarily mean that you have died already, but rather that the cocoon doesn't function anymore. On leaving the cocoon, you reach the second stage, that which is supplied by psychic energy. Psychic and physical energies are the only two which man can manipulate. The greatest gift God granted man is free will. Among living beings, free will is given only to man. As such, man has the choice to use his energy in a positive or negative way. As soon as your soul leaves the body, you will immediately realize that you can perceive everything happening at the place of dying, be it in a hospital room, at the site of an accident, or wherever you left your body. You do not register these events with your earthly consciousness, but rather with a new awareness. You register everything with this new awareness, even during the time your body has no blood pressure, no pulse, no breathing, and in some cases even no measurable brain waves. You realize exactly what everyone says, what they think, and how they act. You will later be able to tell in minute detail, for example, that 3 blow torches were used to cut your body out of the crashed car. It has even occurred that people could recall the exact license plate number of the car that ran into them, and the driver who decided to take off. Scientifically, it is not explainable that someone who does not have brainwaves could read a license plate number. From the scientists, humility is demanded. We have to accept, in humbleness, that there are millions of things which we cannot understand. This is not to say that those things which we cannot understand do not exist, or are not real simply on the grounds that we are not able to understand them. If I blew a dog whistle, you wouldn't hear it, but every dog could hear it, the reason being that the human ear is not made for the reception of such high frequencies. In the same way, an average man is unable to behold a soul which is out of the physical body, while, on the contrary, this stepped-out soul can still register earthly vibrations and can understand everything that happens at the site of an accident. Many people have an out-of-body experience during surgery, and in fact are watching the surgeons at work. This fact has to be acknowledged by all medical and nursing staffs, and during their work on the patient, they should speak only of matters they believe the unconscious one is allowed to hear. It is sad what is said in the presence of unconscious people, as they can often hear every word. You, too, have to know that when approaching the bed of your dying mother or father, who may be in a deep coma, that this woman or man can hear everything you say. At those moments, it is not too late to say sorry, or I love you, or whatever else you want to say. For these words, it is never too late to say them, even to the dead ones, because they can still hear you. Even then, you can finish unfinished business, which you might have carried with you for 10 or 20 years. In this way, you can unburden yourself of your guilt so that you yourself may live more fully. In the second stage, the dead one will realize that he is whole again. People who were blind can see again. People who couldn't hear or speak can hear and speak again. Those of my patients suffering from multiple sclerosis, being able to move only in a wheelchair and having trouble uttering a sentence, tell me full of joy after they return from a near-death experience, "Dr. Ross, I could dance again." And there are thousands in wheelchairs who during the second stage could finally dance again. Of course, after their return, they are back in their ailing body. You understand now that this out-of-body experience is an enjoyable and blessed happening. The little girls who have lost their hair from cancer treatments tell me after such an event, "I had my nice curls again." Women whose breasts were removed have their breasts again. They are quite simply whole again, just perfect. Many of my skeptical colleagues say, "Those cases can be considered projections of wishful thinking." 51% of all my cases were sudden near-death experiences. I do not believe that anyone goes to work dreaming while crossing the street, that he will in the future remain in possession of his feet. Suddenly, however, due to an accident, he sees one of his legs on the road separated from his body. In spite of that, he still sees himself in his near-death experience in full possession of two legs. All of this is naturally no proof for a skeptic, and in order to calm down the skeptics, we did a scientific project with blind people. Our condition was that we would involve only blind people who had not had any light perception for at least the last 10 years. Those who had an out-of-body experience and came back can tell you in detail what colors and jewelry you were wearing if you were present. Furthermore, they can tell you the color and pattern of your sweater, or of your tie, and so on. You understand that these statements refer to facts which one cannot invent. You can recheck the facts, providing you are not afraid of the answers. However, if you are afraid of them, then you may come to me like some of the skeptics and tell me that those out-of-body experiences are the result of lack of oxygen. Of course, if it were only a matter of lack of oxygen, I would prescribe it for all my blind patients. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? If someone doesn't like a certain truth, he will come up with 1,000 arguments against it. However, again, this is his problem. One shouldn't try to convince other people. When they die, they will know it anyway. In the second stage, you will also notice that nobody will die alone. When you leave the physical body, you are in an existence where there is no time. That simply means that time doesn't exist anymore. In the same way, one can no longer speak of space and distance in the usual sense because those are earthly phenomena. If, for example, a young American dies in Asia and thinks of his mother in Washington, he will bridge the thousands of miles through the power of thought in a split second and will be with her. In the second stage, there are no distances. This phenomenon was experienced by many people when they realized that somebody who lived far away suddenly appeared in front of them. A day later, a telephone call or a telegram reached them, telling of the passing of the one seen, who lived hundreds or thousands of miles away. These people are by nature very intuitive, for normally one doesn't notice this kind of visitor. On this level, you realize as well that nobody can die alone because the deceased one is able to visit anyone he likes. There are people awaiting you who died before you, who loved and treasured you a lot. And since time doesn't exist on this level, someone who lost a child when he was 20 years of age could, after his passing at the age of 99, still meet his child as a child. For those on the other side, 1 minute could be equal to 100 years of our earth time. What the church tells little children about guardian angels is based on fact. There is proof that every human being, from his birth until his death, is guided by a spirit entity. Everyone has such a spirit guide, whether you believe it or not. Whether you are Jewish, Catholic, or a member of any other religion doesn't matter, for such love is unconditional. This is why everyone receives this gift of a spirit guide. They are the ones who my little children call playmates. They talk to them, and they are fully aware of their presence. But about the time they have to go to school, parents tell them, "You are now a big boy. You go to school. One doesn't play such childish games anymore." In this way, you forget that you have spirit playmates until you are lying on your deathbed. A dying old lady conveys to me, "Here he is again." Since I do not know what she is referring to, I ask this lady if she could share with me what she has just seen. She tells me, "You must know. When I was a little kid, he used to always be around me, but I have totally forgotten that he existed." A day later she dies, full of joy, knowing that someone who loves her dearly is waiting for her. In general, the people who are waiting for us on the other side are the ones who loved us the most. You always meet those people first. In cases of very small children, 2 or 3 year olds, for example, whose grandparents and parents, as well as all the other known family members, are still on earth, it is mainly their personal guardian angel who receives them, or Jesus, or another religious figure. I never encountered a Protestant child who saw the Virgin Mary in his last minutes, yet she was perceived by many Catholic children. It is not a matter of discrimination. You are simply received by those who meant the most to you. In the second stage, after you have perceived that your body is whole again and you have encountered your loved ones, you will realize that dying is only a transition to a different form of life. The earthly, physical forms you leave behind because you have no need for them anymore. But before you step out of your physical body in exchange for those forms which you will keep for eternity, you pass through a phase which is totally imprinted with items of the physical world. It could be that you float through a tunnel, pass through a gate, or cross a bridge. Having been born in Switzerland, I was allowed to cross a pass in the Alps covered with wild flowers. Everyone is met by the heaven he or she imagined. For me, naturally, I was allowed to experience this transition by crossing a mountain pass of incomparable beauty. Meadows were covered with the colored flowers of the Alps, which I could only compare to a Persian carpet. After you have passed this tunnel, bridge, or mountain pass, you are at its end embraced by light. This light is whiter than white. It is extremely bright, and the more you approach this light, the more you are embraced by the greatest, indescribable, unconditional love you could ever imagine. There are no words for it. If someone is having a near-death experience, he is allowed to see this light only for a short moment. After this, he must return. But when you die, I mean really die, the connection between the cocoon and the butterfly, which could be compared with a navel cord, will be severed. After this, it is not possible to return to the earthly body. But you wouldn't want to return to it anyway, for after seeing the light, nobody wants to go back. In this light, you will experience for the first time what man could have been. Here, there is understanding without judging, and here you experience unconditional love. In this presence, which many people compare with Christ or God, with love or light, you will come to know that all your life on earth was nothing but a school that you had to go through in order to pass certain tests and learn special lessons. As soon as you have finished this school and mastered your lessons, you are allowed to go home, to graduate. Some people may ask, why do such cute little children have to die? The answer is quite simple. They have learned in a very short period what one has to learn, which could be different things for different people. There is one thing everybody has to learn before he can return from where he came, and that is unconditional love. If you have learned and practiced this, you have mastered the greatest lesson of all. In this light, in the presence of God, Christ, or whatever you want to name it, you have to look back on your entire life from the first day until the last. With this viewing of your own life, you have reached the third stage. On this level, you are no longer in the possession of the consciousness from the first stage or of the awareness from the second. You are now in possession of knowledge. You know in minute detail every thought you had at any time during your life on earth. You will remember every deed and know every word that you ever spoke. This recapitulation is only a very small part of your knowing, because at this moment you know all consequences resulting from your thoughts and from every one of your words and deeds. God is unconditional love. During this review of your earthly life, you will not blame God for your fate, but you will know that you yourself were your own worst enemy, since you are now accusing yourself of having neglected so many opportunities to grow. Now you know that long ago, when your house burned down, when your child died, when your husband hurt himself, or when you yourself suffered a heart attack, all fatal blows were merely some of the many possibilities for you to grow in understanding, to grow in love, to grow in all those things which we still have to learn. And instead of using those opportunities wisely, you will repent now. With every blow, I became more and more embittered in such a way that my rage and my negativity grew. We are created for a very simple, beautiful, and wonderful life. My greatest wish is that you will start looking at life differently. If you accept your life as something you were created for, then you will no longer question whose lives should be extended and whose should not. No one would ask if someone should be given an overdose in order to shorten his or her life. But dying must never mean having to suffer. Nowadays, medical science is so fantastic that anyone can be kept pain-free. If your dying ones can be kept without pain, dry, and nursed with care, and you have the courage to take them all to your homes, I mean all, if possible, then none of them will ask you for an overdose. Within the last 20 years, only one person asked me for an overdose. I didn't understand why, and I sat down and asked him, "Why will you have it?" And he revealed to me, "I don't want to have it. It's my mother. She cannot take my situation any longer. And this is why I promised her to ask for an injection." Naturally, we talked to his mother and we could help her. You must understand that it was not hate which brought her to this desperate point. It was simply too much for her to endure. No dying patient is going to ask for an overdose provided he is cared for with love and is helped to finish his unfinished business. In the same way, I want to point out that it is a blessing to have cancer. I do not want to minimize the bad parts that go along with cancer, but I want you to know that there are thousands of things which are worse than cancer. I have patients with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, one of the many neurological illnesses where you cannot do anything but watch the process of paralysis continue until you cannot move anymore. Finally, you cannot breathe or talk. I do not know if you can imagine what it feels like to be totally paralyzed from your toes to your head. You are unable to write and to speak. You just can't do anything. If you have heard about such people, let me know. We are in the possession of a helpful communication chart or speaking board, which enables the patient to communicate with you. My wish is that you pass on to many people a little more love. Think about the fact that those people for whom you select the most costly Christmas presents are often those people you fear the most, and for whom your feelings are the most negative ones. I doubt if it is truly necessary for you to give someone a big present. Unconditional love would have been more appropriate. There are 20 million children in the world dying of starvation. Adopt one of those children and start buying smaller presents. Think about the fact that there are many poor people, even in Western Europe. Share your blessings of wealth. Then, when the windstorms blow into your life, think about them as a present for yourself, which will not be seen as such at that moment, but perhaps 10 or 20 years later. For they will give you strength and teach you things which, otherwise, you would have never learned. If you, symbolically speaking, get thrown into a tumbler like a stone, it depends fully on yourself if you get crushed or if you come out of it as a polished, sparkling diamond. I want to assure you that it is a blessing to sit at the bedside of a dying patient. Dying doesn't have to be a sad and horrible matter. Instead, you can experience many wonderful and loving things. What you learn from dying patients, you can pass on to your children and to your neighbors, and maybe our world would become a paradise again. I believe now is the time to start.